Welcome to the View My Seats podcast. I'm your host, John Lord. With me today to discuss the World Cup, specifically this afternoon's United States versus Ghana game, is my buddy Herx. Herxy, how's it going?
Good. How are you, John?
Excellent, excellent. So you are officially or unofficially a part of the American Outlaws?
Oh, I am full on official.
Which makes you more than qualified to talk about the World Cup.
Sure. Yeah.
Sure. So tell me then, today's Monday, United States, Ghana later this afternoon, this evening. Before we get into that game, which we both want to talk about, what are your thoughts on the World Cup so far?
So far, we're four days in. I think this has definitely been a much better event, much better tournament. A lot more fun to watch than last time around in 2010 in South Africa, that's for sure. And just the games alone have been more exciting. And the most basic stat that you can look at is just the number of goals through 11 games so far. It's almost doubled since the last tournament. So a lot of the teams are going out and actually pressing for the win, you know, trying to score and not just sit back and, you know, play for a 1-0 game or a 1-1 draw, a 0-0 draw. They're going out and they understand that it's not just going to be the results that'll get them through. It'll be the goal differential, which is the first tiebreaker.
What in your mind has been the best game so far?
Best game, the Brazil Croatia game was phenomenal to me. The 3-1 win for Brazil was not really indicative of the game as a whole. The late calls definitely swung that heavily in Brazil's favor. And they have some world class divers on that team, that's for sure. The Italy England game on Saturday, short of being, you know, really hurt by the conditions that they were playing in, was a really fun, entertaining, you know, end to end type game to watch, which is definitely not Italy's calling card. They're definitely known as a more defensive team that likes to break out on a counter, but they went out and they played a much more exciting, entertaining game. So I would definitely highlight those two of the 11 that have been played so far.
I caught half of the Brazil Croatia game. I didn't see any of the Italy England game, even though I wanted to. What surprised me the most with Brazil Croatia, and again, I don't have anywhere near the interest or expertise as you do. I knew Brazil was good. I knew Brazil was one of the favorites. But what surprised me was that Croatia is a very good team. And I know they have to beat Mexico in order to advance, but people wouldn't be surprised if Croatia made it into the knockout stage, correct?
No, not at all. I think people kept going back and forth. Everybody said Brazil is going to go through, and you know it's kind of a foregone conclusion for most fans at this point. But a lot of people were going back and forth between Croatia and Mexico. Mexico had a disastrous qualifying campaign, trying to go through CONCACAF, the North American Central Caribbean Confederation. But late in the qualifying stages, they dumped the coach, they dumped most of the team and just said, forget it, we're going to start over. And the team that they brought to Brazil was that team that played the very tail end of the qualifiers. And they came out hungry, they came out on the same page, and it was a 1-0 result for them in their first game against Cameroon. But they looked really good, and they can definitely give Brazil a run for their money, just like Croatia did. It's the problem with Croatia against Brazil was, like I said, the late calls, the late goals that really tipped the scoreline.
You mentioned that, and I had wanted to ask you about that separately, but since you brought it up, every World Cup it seems that the officials, the referees, play a role in the outcome of games, and I know that FIFA has instituted some goal line technology, so now we'll be able to, tell when a goal is a goal. But there still seems to be a lot of discretion on the field. And you have a sport, soccer, that is so much about embellishment. You know, there are certain teams that just love to play up contact, others that don't do it as artfully. So you take Brazil, for example, and Brazil is such a, they play such a stylish game of soccer, on the ball, off the ball, but they also are so stylish when they flop. And that call, in the box against Croatia, ended up costing Croatia the game. And, I just wonder if embellishment is going to continue to be a part of soccer, which it is, how are there, or is there any way to improve the quality, of the officiating, or should this just be what we expect in soccer?
I think it goes both ways. It depends on the really it depends on the fan and the country or the players or the club that they really like. The Brazilians, the Spanish have developed a reputation as divers, as floppers. For many people, especially the non-soccer fan looking at the World Cup as, you know, the time that they really, you know, start paying attention to the sport, it's disappointing. It's, you know, really, like, you're going to cheat to win, and it unfortunately has become part of the game. From an officiating standpoint, you know, it's tough because while they're supposed to be four officials in every game, the fourth official doesn't do anything. He tries to control the coaches, he controls the substitutions, he informs the crowd. That's really all the fourth is there for. And then you have the two sideline officials where, if something happens, you know, in the center of the field, they're 30 yards away from it at any given point at best. And then you have your one official in the middle of the field who has to be behind the play at all times. He can never be in front of the play because then if something happens, it immediately counters in the other direction. You know, he's got a long way to go to catch up against, you know, some of the fittest athletes in the world. So what's the answer? You know, I have no idea.
One thing I did hear was that a lot of controversy surrounds offsides calls. Like there's no, like you're saying, so much of it depends on the side officials being able to keep up with the play in order to call offsides properly. Why not institute some sort of technology that can determine whether or not a player is offsides? I mean, if they have it with the goal line, I'm sure they can do it with players on the field as well.
They certainly can, and that, you're absolutely right. That has become a talking point now. But you also have to look at FIFA as the organization. You know, how long has the tennis system been around at, you know, the international, at the major levels? Easily 5, probably more like 10 years now.
I think it's been around for a little longer than that. Yeah.
And that's the same system that FIFA has now just adopted for goal line technology. So
they're slow to the party.
They're very slow to the party. For the non-soccer fan, it's kind of like baseball in that, you know, baseball doesn't want to change. It just was about 5 years ago, that the discussion really started heating up with, you know, fair foul home run type calls for instant replay. So I think you're going to start seeing it more as we progress and the call for the technological improvement happens. But it's not going to be an immediate fix in the process.
Yeah, as a casual soccer fan, I really detest the constant, you know, flopping and looks like almost aggravated assault on the field when it's nothing more than a brush by. But to be fair, you're seeing it more and more in sports. Take the NBA Finals, for example. You know, it just came to an end last night. The Spurs beat the Heat, and the best player in the world gets a lot of crap for flopping. And LeBron James is certainly someone who people love watching play basketball, but he's been found to be guilty. Same with Dwayne Wade of a little excessive theatrics. So I don't think it's just a soccer issue. I think it's in a lot of sports. I've just noticed it a lot with this World Cup because it's the first time I've started to really sit down and watch soccer. So you also are talking about the Italy-England game. And I kind of wanted to get into this maybe when we start talking about the United States-Ghana, because weather is playing a significant factor in, I don't know if in the outcome of these games as much as the quality of play. And that Italy and England game on Saturday was played in Manaus, which, from what I understand, is a city of 2 million people that you can only reach by boat because it's in the middle of the Amazon rainforest.
So the perfect place to put a World Cup stadium that's never going to be used again because there is no local club team.
Correct.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there's another time we can get into the scandal of stadium construction and FIFA awarding these games to certain countries. Let's not do that. But I do wonder, on Saturday, and I didn't watch the game, did the weather in Manaus or the field conditions play a role in the outcome of that game?
Absolutely. And the England players, the English staff, the Italian players, the Italian staff, they all said it after the game. You know, it was eventually like trying to, run through butter. You know, the humidity was really high. The temperature was very high. And the fact that they played that game was not the last game of the day, where, after their game, which was, that was the 6 o'clock game, I believe, they then played a later game that day, Japan and, Cote d'Ivoire, in a different part of the country. A simple fix like that could have easily happened. Put it later in the day, temperature goes down, humidity goes down. But all the coaches, all the players said, come the 75th minute, the 80th minute towards the end of the game, it was, tired, heavy legs, just, they could do a little 5-yard sprint, but that was it. They didn't have the energy for it.
So that's a perfect segue for us to go to our game today, which is the United States opener versus Ghana. And the weather is apparently going to play a role in the game today. Now, they're playing in, is it Natal?
Yes, yep.
Natal, which, if I can remember, they've already played a game there in this World Cup.
Yes,
and it rained heavily. What game was that?
That was.
Was it Cameroon, Mexico?
Yep, you got it. Cameroon, Mexico.
And I remember watching 5 minutes of that game, and it was raining. So my question is it going to rain today?
Based on the weather reports I saw this morning, just from looking at U.S. Soccer's Twitter feed, it's looking pretty good today. It's going to be warmer than it was for the Mexican game, and the field is obviously going to be chewed up a little bit, but they're supposed to have good weather as of this morning. Definitely hot because it's Brazil. It's always going to be hot, but the rain should not be a factor.
Would the and this is where you can help me out with the previewing this game, the United States game versus Ghana. This is the opener for both in their group stage. What are they? Group G?
Correct. Yep.
And as we know, and has been well disclosed and discussed before, the United States is in the group of death, where they face Ghana, Germany, and Portugal. Portugal and Germany are considered to be the favorites to advance to the next round, but the United States certainly will have its hand full with Ghana today, considering the history of these two countries. And has Ghana been responsible for knocking the United States out of the last two or three World Cups?
The last two World Cups, it's been Ghana that's taken the U.S. out.
So you obviously know more about the United States than you do Ghana, but is this United States team the type of team that can force a different result against Ghana? In the past, has it been Ghana's speed that has been the issue for the United States? And is this United States team built differently than before so they can easily contend with that speed?
Yeah, in the past, Ghana's just been a more successful country. Their players have been more, not just faster, but more skilled. And the U.S., traditionally has always been a defensive-minded, hit-them-on-the-counter type of system, type of team, where they want to sit back, absorb all the pressure, and then when they finally get the ball, do a quick turnaround and head up the field. With the new players that are in, a lot of young players this time around, who were not involved in the 2010 World Cup, who weren't even eligible to play in the 2010 World Cup for the U.S. The revenge factor, from what I've read a lot, is just not even part of their mindset. It's an entirely different U.S. team, an entirely different U.S. system that they're playing, where it's more possession oriented, more building instead of just kick and chase. So for a hockey analogy, they don't just throw it down behind the boards and then try to work it out. They want to build up from the back and build through the middle of the ice and do a quick, not a quick counterattack, but a quick build in that way.
So Klinsmann has brought a much more tactical approach to the United States men's national team.
Absolutely. And that's definitely been helped a lot by the players that were involved with the U.S. roster this time around.
And this is a good time since I mentioned the coach, Jürgen Klinsmann. Kind of an interesting lead up to the World Cup for him. It's rare. I guess maybe it's not rare. I don't know soccer all that well, but it's rare for the coach to be the primary focus of the team prior to the games being played. And it's clear that Klinsmann has been the one that the media has focused on for some of the decisions he's made and some of the things he said. And we don't need to rehash the Landon Donovan decision, because I think it's impossible to say how we're going to react to his omission from the roster until this team plays. If they play well, then no one will care. But if they play poorly and it looks like they could use fresh legs to come in the second half for about 20, 25 minutes and give them the U.S. team a spark, then we're all going to say, well, that guy's in Los Angeles right now. So it depends on how the team fares. But I did want to know what you, and I think it's an easy answer because I think all of us who have played sports feel one way about this, but if you're Klinsmann, it's obvious that it's a strategy to come to the media and say that we don't have a chance to win. But how do you think that's playing in the locker room? I mean, does this seem like the type of team that is going to respond to that type of strategy, that type of, I guess you can say it's a way of certainly the coach trying to take some pressure off the team. And this is a young team, right? So I wonder if this strategy is going to be effective or not, if you just see it as kind of a misguided attempt to try to motivate players, or is he just being honest?
I think you hit on all of it. I think some of it is just the blunt honesty that Klinsmann has always brought to the program. This isn't the first time that he's made comments along these same lines of, this isn't how we look at the world. You know, we can always go out, and if we work hard enough, we can win. And here comes, a foreign coach and who approaches it with a much more straightforward mentality of, no, we can't do it. And you're right. It's hopefully just a motivational tactic that he's gone after. But what makes it really weird is that he would come out and say this after U.S. Soccer has just handed him a contract extension before finding out what he can do at this World Cup. So when you add up all these little pieces, it makes it seem like Klinsmann is actually looking forward to 2018 and not so much 2014, where he's just okay with whatever result we get out. And if I'm a player, that's me in that locker room as a rallying cry, let's prove everybody wrong, including our coach.
Though the leaders of this team, the Tim Howards, the Clint Dempseys, the Michael Bradleys, there's a chance they're not around in 4 years. So for the coach to come out and say, we're not winning now, we're planning on the future, that's got to be a little irritating, even if Klinsmann is coming into the locker room and saying, hey, fellas, that's just what I'm saying to the press to make it so that you guys don't have as much pressure. I can still see that irritating some of the older players. But to be honest with you, I kind of like Klinsmann. There are a lot of reasons why I shouldn't, and I know why people complain about him and, his Donovan and the things he's been saying to the media recently, but in a way, it's really refreshing. And to be honest, I know you're a huge fan, but the United States doesn't have a chance to win this World Cup. I mean, it would be really, really cool if the United States won today versus Ghana. Beyond that, I don't know what people are realistically saying are their chances. And so for Klinsmann to come out and say we're not going to win, I mean, I don't know why you'd say that as the coach, but at the same time, he's right.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, the world is stacked against the U.S., and it's part of that appeal to, part of the appeal to me and a part of the appeal to a lot of soccer fans in the U.S. is we're not the best. Like, you know, we have this belief of, oh yeah, absolutely, we can win. Like, there's no question. We can go out there and win if we play to our best and, you know, and other things happen around us. But we could also get absolutely destroyed. You know, we could go out and beat Germany 1-0 by just sitting back and holding them off and just playing great defense. Or in the same game, we could get beat 5-0. You know, there's a lot of those, you know, question marks in the air around the U.S., especially in this World Cup with this draw of Germany, you know, one of the top four countries in the world. Portugal with arguably the best player in the world, and then Ghana, who has knocked us out of the last two World Cups. You know, when the draw came out, my head was in my hands. I was terrified, and I'm still terrified. But you know, part of being a fan of this team is that belief that, you know, as much as ESPN has, God, I wish they would stop using it, there is the belief that we will win. And
oh yeah,
if you don't go into a game like that, then yeah, why bother playing?
Yeah, yep. That is now the I believe that we can win is now haunting my dreams, like you know, some of these songs that come on the radio in the summer. About being the underdog, I think that's also what it interests you as a fan of the American Outlaws, as part of the American Outlaws, the United States soccer fan club. But for me, the casual fan, I love rooting for a team from this country that is the underdog, because in so many, really every other competition, foreign policy, you name it, the United States is considered the favorite, the most powerful. And for 2 hours later this afternoon and later next week, and we're not supposed to win. And it's kind of cool to root for a team that is normally, you know, coming from a country that is always considered the winners. And here we are, underdogs, and I kind of like it.
I love it. I mean, you can draw the parallels to any sport and being a fan of a team in any sport. You know, when, perfect example, the past Winter Olympics, when, you know, U.S. hockey is going up against, you know, Canada, like that just captured the nation because we were the underdog in that one game. You know, any other game in that, you know, setup, yeah, okay, we should win that game. But that one matchup, we became the underdog, and the nation just got glued to the television or the computer screen so that they could watch that game. It is a great, it's something, you're right, we're not used to, and it's fun.
Yeah, it is fun, and I'm looking forward to it today. So as we wrap it up here, give us players on the United States team today in their game versus Ghana that we should be paying attention to. So in other words, if the United States is successful today, it'll be because these players played well.
Michael Bradley is always the first name on any sort of list in that regard. As Michael Bradley goes, 99% of the time, that's how this team goes. The biggest question mark for the U.S. team for today, and really for this entire World Cup, is will the U.S. play in a style and in a setup that they've been playing before the World Cup send-off series, or is Klinsmann going to go more the way that they were playing against Turkey and Azerbaijan with a two-striker setup? And the reason I bring that up is it changes the players that Klinsmann can get on the field early. And the big name in that regard is Beckerman. If Kyle Beckerman is to get on the field, he will sit directly in front of the back line, in front of the defensive line, and just stop every attack there. He is a defensive-minded midfielder. He stops a player in his tracks when they're running. He plays smart, but he is not the most athletic player on the team, especially in comparison to the players in his position, being Jermaine Jones, who is a little more aggressive, a little more reckless, not as defensive, but a bigger body, a more fit athlete who has been Klinsmann's boy since day one.
Kyle Beckerman, he of the very natty dreads.
Very natty dreads. A very much claim to fame.
I know Beckerman because of the natty dreads.
So those two, Bradley and Beckerman, again, both in the middle, and Jozy Altidore. You know, he got two goals in the final send-off game against Nigeria. Can he do it again? Can he do it against better competition? Can he be the player that the U.S. needs him to be on the world stage and take it to Ghana?
And if he doesn't get it done and all the other key components don't play well, you know what the whole bar is going to be saying today. Where is Landon freaking Donovan?
Where is Landon freaking Donovan?
Where is Landon Donovan? Hey, thanks a lot for the time, Herks, and we'll be watching today as the United States takes on Ghana, and let's chat again later in the week, and maybe we'll preview United States-Portugal.
Sounds like a plan.
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you.